So no victory parade after all. Instead, all we get is bad backs shoveling snow. While we look at the rest of the week's news, from sports to politics, next.
Week in Review is made possible through the generous support of Dave and Jamie Cummings, Bob and Marlise Gourley, the Courtney S. Turner Charitable Trust, John H. Mize, and Bank of America N.A. co-trustees. The Francis Family Foundation, through the discretionary fund of David and Janice Francis. And by viewers like you. Thank you.
Welcome, I'm Nick Haynes, and thank you for joining us on our weekly journey through the impactful, confusing and downright head-scratching news stories in Kansas City. Hopping on board the Week in Review bus with us this week, KCUR News Director Lisa Rodriguez, former Star reporter and editorial writer Dave Helling, at the helm of our Metro's newest newspaper, Next Page KC, Eric Wesson, and tracking the region's top political stories for KCUR News, Brian Ellison. Now, it was a super painful week for many Kansas Cityans.
It was very disappointing.
Disappointed. Definitely wanted to see them win.
You know, and then I booked to come back here to see my parents and hopefully a parade, but no parade.
Alrighty, if the Chiefs fizzling out on the NFL's biggest stage wasn't enough, shoveling out from another winter storm did nothing to boost our collective mood or that of parents who had to juggle work and trying to take care of their kids as schools closed down. So no victory parade, instead just a sore back from shoveling snow. I'm going to force our reporters this week to do something we're not traditionally good at as we start the show, and that's to give us one positive, good news story that happened this week. Brian?
It is no problem at all, Nick. I am happy to pivot from football news to the start of spring training for the Kansas City Royals in Surprise, Arizona. Pitchers and catchers reported this week. Not only the weather is a contrast, but I think there's also great prospects for a very successful season. There's a lot of enthusiasm. Spring training makes me happy every single year.
Okay, Dave, you're great at spotlighting problems on this show, but how about something positive?
Well, the two things. First, February is half over.
Okay, so all right.
Yep. Positive. And second, The Athletic has a story that Kansas City has made a formal application for a WNBA franchise. And that application includes construction of a basketball training facility down by the soccer stadium, as well as other parts of improving the T-Mobile Center downtown. And so I think that, you know, if we could land that franchise, I think we would all see that as good news.
You're probably the hardest person on local elected officials on this show. Was there any positive news story you could point to in what has been a kind of a bleak, painful week?
Absolutely. The city saved $900,000 on not having a Super Bowl parade. That means they can take
good
that
spin.
Money
good spin.
And fix some of the potholes that are popping.
Excellent spin. Lisa, were you able to dredge up something positive that happened this week?
First of all, I will not stand for February hate.
Okay, all right.
I love this month. Some really wonderful people were born in the month of February.
All right.
There's no accounting for taste, is there, Nick?
But I've got a little Valentine's Day story for you from one of our reporters at KCUR. Highlighted a queer dating event called Where to Find Us, where friends pitch their friends, Shark Tank style, to a group of people with PowerPoint slides and everything, why you should date my amazing friend. It's a charming, wonderful story and brought me joy this week.
We all deserve some joy. Here's another good news story for you. Thousands of people in Mongolia and Ukraine are going to think the Chiefs just won the Super Bowl because they're going to get all those pre-printed shirts that couldn't be sold after the Chiefs lost in Philadelphia.
There is a lot of gear that was pre-printed for them should they have won. And that is the gear we're talking about that we are getting in the hands of those who need.
It's nice to know that they're going to a good place, not waste. The garments go to a good use.
Isn't that good to know? We're going to have people out in Mongolia who are going to think that the Chiefs won.
The people of Ukraine suffered enough.
Okay, all right.
We have to send them Chiefs shirts.
It could be a tremendous fundraising opportunity for them. I think those would go for quite a lot on eBay.
Okay, I know a lot of you tuned into it to look at what the problems are in this community and connect the dots on those big issues you need to know about. I can tell you that Kansas City Mayor Quinton Lucas has just escaped a snow-covered Kansas City. He's now in California leading a meeting of the nation's mayors who are now fretting over funding freezes from a string of executive orders issued by President Trump. What is Mayor Lucas most worried about, Lisa? Are some projects simply not going to happen now because of funding freezes?
I think that's a legitimate fear from the mayor. Now, there are some projects underway that have already been allocated federal funds, and a lot of agencies right now are just waiting to see, did the check make it to the bank? Did the check make it to the bank, and can we move forward? Some of these projects, the mayor's talked about rephrasing certain aspects of it, certain contracts, taking away some terms like diversity and minority and assigning zip codes particularly to them instead. But we've got a lot of big projects happening here. The South Loop Park project to cover a portion of the downtown loop with a park, that involves federal funding. A project 71 Highway that would reconnect neighborhoods split by 71 Highway, that relies on federal funding. Almost any major infrastructure project happening that's millions and millions of dollars probably has some bit of federal funding.
And that's true if you're living in Shawnee or Lee Summit, all of those cities facing the same thing. What about the World Cup? They're also expecting quite a bit of federal cash coming in here.
Well, and I think the answer to that, along with really to the rest of it as well, is uncertainty. We really just don't know. The announcements from the White House have come with such sweeping language and with such rapidity that I think local officials are understandably left to wonder, what does this really mean? What is going to happen? I think a lot of that is going to be sorted out not only in further actions from the White House, but also in the courts ruling on which of these actions are being taken with legitimate constitutional authority.
A lot of housing projects in the urban core use CDBG, which is community development grant money for blighted areas. Those are federal dollars. It's going to be a question of will those pass to make it to the finish line as well.
I'm also wondering, does Mayor Lucas now have something new to worry about as a judge rules that President Trump can move forward with the plan to force federal workers to take a buyout or be fired immediately? Let's remember, the federal government is Kansas City's largest employer. Dave, are you going to see an emptying out of downtown, and let's face it, a potentially massive new hole in the money Kansas City gets from its earnings tax?
Yeah, just a bit of clarity to begin with. The judge who said this can go forward said that the unions who had sued originally just didn't have standing. They'll find someone who has direct impact and refile that suit. And so at some level, this will be figured out in court. But generally speaking, Nick, you're right on the mark. The Kansas City depends on the federal workforce. The General Services Administration, which is headquartered here, all of the people who work there, who work for the U.S. Attorney's Office, the IRS, all of them are living in this sort of weird limbo land in terms of whether their employment can go forward. And if there is a significant reduction in the federal workforce, Kansas City will feel that pain. There's no question about it.
You know, I'm also seeing that while folks here, local elected leaders, are worried about what's happening in Washington with the Trump administration, with funding, what about in Kansas and Missouri? I see they've also adopted the sort of Elon Musk departments of government efficiency, too. And in fact, in Kansas this past week, their online portal to get public input on where they could start slashing state government services got so many responses, it actually crashed.
I'm of two minds about what the potential impact of that move at the state level is, Nick. On the one hand, I think it might be of actually greater significance in the sense that it is coming from government officials, both on the executive side and also legislators who are putting these efforts together, as opposed to Elon Musk, whose sort of status as a government official is a little bit questionable. I think, though, in reality, this is an effort that's actually been going on even before Donald Trump took office.
They're not just copying him.
Well, it's a regular part of political rhetoric, especially in states like Kansas and Missouri, that we're going to cut government waste. That is the definition of why, that is the explanation for a lot of government actions. They have done that in certain ways, but largely not. Mostly government services have expanded, even under Republicans during those times. So I think it's an interesting question to see whether something has really changed now.
You know, three homicides in 24 hours pushes the murder count in Kansas City to 21. And we're only 6 weeks into the new year. Remember, at this time last year, there were just 12. So it's almost doubled, Eric?
Yes. And this is like a four-year high in this time over the past 4 years. So what's the solution? We've got more money that's going to be poured into the police department. The new budget calls for 7% more of an increase, and they're already expanding budget. So what do? We've got these so-called new programs coming on board that's supposed to help fight violent crime and crime in general. We've got a public safety sales tax coming up, but the numbers just don't give people any security that something is being done.
I don't think I've seen any definitive explanation, Lisa, as to why we're seeing almost a doubling now of the homicide rate in Kansas City this year. Have you seen one?
I have not seen, not from the police chief nor the mayor or elected officials, any explanation for an increase in deaths and in gun violence. And I certainly couldn't offer one myself. We do know that most shooting deaths and most violence like this happens as a result of an argument, and that when guns are available and handy, that's when arguments can become deadly. They do not become deadly nearly as much when there's not a gun.
We might not have had an explanation. We didn't really get a full explanation of why they even went down last year, though, did we?
Well, I think that's right, Nick, and I think that's a good reminder to us that when we're looking at numbers and statistics, that you can't look at too small a sample size and draw any dramatic conclusions from it. When everyone celebrated that homicides were down 20% last year, and then we had six in the first week of the new year, I think that was a good reminder that the calendar, the beginnings and ends of a calendar year are pretty arbitrary. The problem may or may not actually be solved.
You know, one of the chatters in the community has been social media, the mayor, other elected officials down enjoying the Super Bowl, having a good time, smiling with all the pictures. In the meantime, people here are dodging bullets and burying loved ones. I think it's a bad look, and it kind of looks like, and you know, I know they got to go represent the city and all of that, but it looks like it's not an important thing when you're out having a good time when people are having funerals.
You mentioned the sales tax that will come up in April that would provide for a new jail in Kansas City that they're looking at. But we have people out on the streets saying human caging. We don't want human caging facilities in our Kansas City area. Is its passage in jeopardy?
I think the public safety aspect of it is that people will fear that people will be running around on the streets loose versus locking them up in jail. The issue is going to be whether or not the people that want it have a good campaign, because it's like, well, we don't have to have a new jail. We can just use the old police station as a jail. Well, then you got third district representative said, we don't want another jail in our district, put it someplace else, so downtown would be better. And the overall scheme of it is, during the World Cup, they don't want people out walking around the streets that's committing crime, so they can lock them up in the downtown city jail.
This would be an election in April, which is only just 2 months away, but it's not just having a sales tax or an extension of a sales tax for a new jail. The Kansas City, Missouri School District also asking for what will be a tax increase to help improve classrooms as well. Is that too much in one ballot measure?
It may be that anti-tax sentiment, which is broad and deep, will extend to the sales tax and perhaps to the school district tax increase, which, you know, Nick, the Kansas City Board of Education has struggled for decades to raise the mill levy outside of the courts. For programs in schools. So I think it's in more trouble than maybe people think. And I think Eric is exactly right. You've got to make a case for it. We're 2 months out, and no one has said anything, which was the strategy for the stadium tax last April. And then suddenly in the last 2 weeks, everyone focused on it and said, no, we don't have enough details to approve it, and there is a danger the same thing will happen this time.
And I agree with Dave. I think it was a bad move for the city, on the city's part, to put both of those taxes on the same ballot. I just don't see voters voting two taxes in at the same time.
And from politically speaking, I am not sure I agree with Dave. I'm not sure why we don't have a mailbox full of flyers explaining what the school bond and what the what the jail tax would be for. I think that should already be happening from a political standpoint.
Now, amid rising concerns over ICE raids in the metro, a Jackson County lawmaker says he'll go undercover this week to see whether federal agents are acting legally. Manny Abarca, who is one of our metro's highest-ranking Hispanic elected leaders, says he will ditch his suit and tie and work in the kitchens of several area Mexican restaurants. Can anybody tell me, did he do it? And what did he find out? I mean, I was just on his Twitter page. There's no mention of it since then.
No, I can't help you. I don't think it's happened yet. we all chuckle about it, but if you start interfering with ice, you could get yourself in real trouble. So maybe cooler heads have prevailed and convinced Mr. Abarca to think harder about what he's talking about.
He was certainly getting lots of aggravation saying this was a publicity stunt.
I'm not sure that what restaurant or any place of work would call him up and take him up on his offer. That seems to me like something that might put a larger target on one's back than running things as is. So I'm not exactly sure what the legislator was hoping to accomplish with this, but we're talking about it now, so I suppose he succeeded.
I think exactly. One person's publicity stunt is another person's act of public protest. Whether you think it is noble or wise probably depends on whether you agree with his position or not.
I thought his goal was to see were they doing it legally.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, by them not knowing he's there and they coming in and they could be violating rights, I think that was his goal, to see exactly how they were doing it. But again, we have a lot of Mexican restaurants. Which one would he go to?
Well, cast your mind back 10 years, and one of the biggest problems in Kansas City was considered to be a massive border war over businesses. In fact, we even became a national news story.
Many states fight each other for business and jobs, spending lots of tax dollars in the process. Kansas and Missouri have been waging border war for years.
Instead of bringing in businesses from outside of this area, they were used to encourage businesses to move just across a street.
Well, since then, the governors of Missouri and Kansas have signed a highly publicized ceasefire agreement to end the practice of business poaching on both sides of state line. But hold the front page, is it all about to end? The truce is about to expire, and apparently Missouri lawmakers aren't interested in continuing it. Are we about to create a business Wild West again on the border, Brian?
Well, I think one important reality is that on the Kansas side, that agreement was signed by the governor. On the Missouri side, it was passed by the legislature.
Okay.
And so what I think is causing this immediate question is the fact that the Legislature's Act 5 years ago is now up for renewal, and that is why there's this conversation happening. I do think, however, that the conversation is greatly complicated by the recent discussions around whether the Kansas City Chiefs and Kansas City Royals might move to the other side of the state.
And I heard some of that testimony in the Missouri legislature this week, that somehow there's the view that because the Chiefs are Kansas is looking to potentially land the Chiefs or the Royals, that has been a violation of that truce.
Yeah, that seems to be a matter of some dispute between the two states. But the broad question, yes, indeed, it does violate the spirit of the idea that you're not poaching businesses from one side of the state line to the other. Whether the Chiefs and Royals situation will exacerbate the broader border war, though, I think is an open question, in part because the tools that the states have to give abatements and other goodies to businesses that move across the state line are not quite as popular as they used to be because they cost the Treasury money. And so there has to be some balance here. You think, you know, Mike Keogh seems less interested in that than other governors might have been in the past. Certainly Jay Nixon, for example, was all about trying to lure businesses across the state line. So I think there might be less of it if the Chiefs and Royals situation resolves itself than people fear.
But we do forget sometimes that it wasn't that long ago that we did have businesses who would literally just go from one block to the other or across state line and get millions of dollars for doing it, even if they were moving just 100 workers.
What you're talking about is exactly what this legislation was intended to stop, which is that there was no benefit to taxpayers for the same 100 people who worked at a company to go from one place to another. They're not moving. They're staying exactly where they are. They're eating at the same places. It's just a matter of where they're commuting to. And so it really was a waste of taxpayer money.
Well, last week we mentioned that John Sherman had said that now his new deadline for making a decision on a new Royals stadium would be mid-year. That could be June or July. Now that the Chiefs' season is officially over, postseason is officially over, can we expect an announcement in the next few days from Clark Hunt about what the Chiefs want to do?
I think they're going to go through their free agency first. That's a priority.
Okay.
Getting people signed and getting that done. And then I think probably maybe around August or September, they'll come back in at beginning of the season to start talking about where their next home is going to be.
And if that turns out to be the case, then 2026 will be the year of action on the two teams, not 2025. Because,
why not?
Because you can't, first of all, the legislatures of both states will long be in adjournment by the time September gets here, August or September of 2025. Second, putting something on the ballot in April of 2026 would require action by the end of January of 2026. That's a difficult, difficult thing if you're announcing in September. So the timeline is getting stretched, and I think, again, as I suggested last week, they're realizing how much money is involved and how hard it is to raise it.
But the Chiefs won't go to a ballot again.
Well, right, but yeah, but you still need the legislature to help, one assumes, unless... Now, the Chiefs and the Royals could say tomorrow, hey, we're going to pay for it ourselves out of our own pocket. Boom, then do it whenever you want to. That, I don't think that's what they have in mind. I think they've said forever that a public-private partnership is needed, and if that's the case, the year of action, it seems now, will be 2026 and not 2025.
Well, just months after Kansas City greenlighted the return of red light cameras, Missouri lawmakers are now debating a bill to ban them. The measure being considered this week in Jefferson City would also outlaw license plate readers. Now, aren't red light cameras one of the major tools Eric, Mayor Lucas is relying on to cut the huge number of fatal crashes we now see?
Yes, and the state of Missouri has. I have an article this week in my paper talking about the number of pedestrian murders that have taken place, vehicle homicides that have taken place, as well as stoplights, people driving recklessly because there's no police on the street to hit them with radar or speeding. So this was probably quite a blow for him.
I always say, though, on this program, just because you propose something doesn't mean it's going to happen. What about on this bill? This is not only banning red light cameras, but also all of those license detection systems, which are also used in many malls, like even Oak Park Mall has all those license detectors there.
And police credit them with solving missing person cases, for example. You know, I think this is a great example, Nick, of something we've observed before, which is that a lot of Missouri legislation targets the big cities of Missouri, but originates with senators and representatives who do not represent those portions of the state. In this case, Senator Mike Moon, Republican from Ash Grove, his an entirely rural or small town district, is exercising this not in consultation with the cities and what they identify as their priorities, but something that would mostly affect those cities. This has happened before, and it's going to continue happening.
I've said on the red light cameras, yes, it is about public safety, but it also brought in an awful lot of money into City Hall as well.
Certainly, and that's not something to ignore. But we have seen, despite the city council passing this, I have not seen the return of red light cameras. So the legal issues surrounding red light cameras to begin, I don't think are completely ironed out. And so I think it was always a complicated move to bring it back.
Now, when you put a program like this together every week, you can't get to every story grabbing the headlines. What was the big local story we missed? The Kansas City Royals trade in the winter chill for surprise Arizona as they begin spring training. And a familiar face returns. Ned Yost, the winningest manager in Royals history, is back as a senior advisor to the team. Kansas Governor Laura Kelly vetoes a proposal that would block minors from receiving gender transition surgeries. Republican leaders claim they have the votes this year to override her. As Kansas lawmakers push to block food stamp recipients from buying soda and candy on the taxpayer's dime, a Kansas Democrat is turning the tables. He introduced a bill prohibiting lawmakers from using their daily expense checks to purchase soda, candy, and alcoholic beverages. Our public radio station, KCUR, cuts ties with UMKC. It follows an announcement by the Kansas City rep to end its longtime relationship with the university last year. And Kansas City is about to get messy again. The soccer superstar heads back to town Tuesday for the CONCACAF Champions Cup against Sporting KC. The team is hosting a big kickoff party Sunday in the Power and Light District. All righty, Eric, did you pick one of those stories or something completely different?
I picked something completely different than we talked about earlier. The 21 homicides already this year. What do we do? What's the plan from the police department? You know, you can't keep throwing money at a problem. You have to come up with something that's a viable plan that'll work.
Dave.
Well, keeping with that theme, I live in Lenexa, Kansas. I have for more than a quarter century. We had two murders about 10 blocks from my house this week. So the problem of domestic violence and weaponry is not limited to Kansas City, Missouri, although obviously it's very bad there. There was a double murder in Lenexa last fall. So I think the idea that legislators need to take a closer look at red flag laws and other things to try and prevent the use of weaponry in domestic disputes should go forward.
Lisa.
Well, I don't know that it's the biggest story in Kansas City this week, but I can't see my friend Steve Kraske pop up in there and not comment. The KCUR's move away from UMKC is an exciting one. It's been in conversations for a long time, and many of the nation's strongest public radio stations are community licensees, as we call them. And I believe that as public radio, belonging to the community is a really important and exciting thing. So it's a transition that'll happen over 3 years, and there are lots of questions and unknowns about that right now, but exciting for the future of the station.
Many people actually may not realize, but we actually, here in public television, we were licensed to the Kansas City, Missouri School District. The board of directors of the Kansas City, Missouri School District were our bosses until we became a community licensee quite a few years ago now. Brian.
Nick, I think we're seeing the very first signs of a potential disagreement between newly elected Missouri Governor Mike Kehoe and his Republican colleagues in the legislature. It is centered on funding for education this week. That has generally, not always, but often been sort of a nonpartisan affair, funding Missouri K-12 schools at something like a full formula that has been established by the legislature. There is now the suggestion from the governor that he does not think a $300 million increase that is called for by that formula should be funded by the state in his budget. He's getting pushback from some of his Republican colleagues. We'll have to see how that plays out.
Can I just throw it quickly, too? We talked about the federal government earlier. There's real discussion of ending the federal Department of Education. Mm-hmm. There is money in that budget for special ed and other things that would impact Missouri. That would make the impact of a cut even more problematic.
And on that, we will say our week has been reviewed, courtesy of KCUR's Lisa Rodriguez and Eric Wesson from Next Page KC, from our NPR affiliate Brian Ellison and former Star reporter and editorial writer Dave Helling. And I'm Nick Haynes from all of us here at Kansas City PBS. Be well, keep calm, and carry on.